Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Confident Hypnotherapist podcast. I hope wherever you are in the world that you are keeping healthy and safe. And this episode, I have a very dear friend chatting with me today. Today we're chatting with Angela Farlam. Now, Angela and I actually met through the Jacqueline Online Academy training there, doing their diploma. And when I met Ange, I thought, just what a truly fabulous individual who has trained with the likes of Richard Bandler and who manages to combine the world of NLP and the world of hypnosis and the world of three principles all together in the work that she does with people. So I'm thrilled that she's able to join me today to have a bit of a chat. Ange, how are you doing?
I am doing great, Lawrence, and I'm honoured to be here. I was like, oh, you've got so many interesting people on your podcast, and then you're asking me. It was like,
why would I not think you're an interesting person? Let's. This is turning into a therapy session very early on, Ange. What makes you think that?
It's just that, you know, I've been a hypnotherapy seeing clients ever since I first did my first course, which was way back in 2004. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've trained with amazing people. And you've actually interviewed, again, it's mindset, but it's like, wow, you know, Rob McNeely, you're like, you're Rob. He's like
Rob's trained. Awesome. Yeah. We love Rob, very much so. I think and anyone who, you know, I think Rob's actually possibly one of the most mentioned hypnotherapists in my podcast.
Well, he's mentioned
at least every couple of episodes.
I did a little bit of training with Bob myself, and that was awesome just a few years ago now. But, just thank you for inviting me along. I'm honoured.
Thank you for sharing your wisdom today. I guess for those who haven't had the chance to meet you before, can you share with us a little bit about your story, about how you came to the world of hypnotherapy?
Oh, it's amazing. Well, it's still amazing to me, but it was 2004. I was already a therapist. Before that, I've had so many lives like a cat. But I was a psychiatric nurse many, many years ago. And then I left that role to run a business with my ex-husband for like 20 years with grocery shops and fish and chip shops. And my heart was never in it, but the money was. And then along the way, I collected a lot of qualifications, mind and body qualifications, remedial massage, aromatherapy, reflexology, kinesiology, sports therapy, sports massage, all of this stuff. And then when my marriage broke up, it became my job. I was working as a therapist. My best friend, her husband had died, and he'd left, obviously as he would, left a massive gap in her life, and she was looking for something different to do. And she was in catering. She'd not done any therapies that I knew of. And she said to me over coffee one day, "Ange, I'm going to do this hypnosis course. Don't tell anybody." And I nearly fell off my chair. I thought, where did that come from? Anyway, it turned out her husband, who was in a band in the 70s, was doing a summer show in Jersey. And there was a hypnotist at the venue who hypnotized the band and all the girlfriends to stop smoking. This was back in the 70s, and none of them smoked, at least for a while. So it had intrigued her. So she'd found this course it was at the university in Leeds, where my son had been at uni. So I said I'd take her along for her interview. So I ended up doing the course. And within the course, Jilly was hypnotizing me to set up ideomotor signals. It was the first time we'd actually practiced on each other at the university, because we could practice away from uni. So we had a rule not to work together, but we did this day. And we were in a room by ourselves, and she took me into trance. And she said one thing, and obviously this is just my memory of it now, which might have changed over the years, but she'd said, "Ange," just like this, "do we go on the M62 to go home?" And she was setting up ideomotor signals, and the answer was no. And I'm sat on an upright chair with my head down and my eyes closed, and I found it hilarious because I thought I saw my finger go up all by itself. I didn't move it, and I thought it was really funny. So I'm laughing, and Jill thought I wasn't in a trance because we're learning. We didn't really know what we were doing at this point. So she's going, "Oh, Ange," but I could not respond because I was in such a deep state. And So I carried on laughing, and I found it even more amusing that she thought, because I couldn't move. But then she said, knowing that you utilize things, I guess, it's okay, Ange, if you want to laugh, you laugh. Which at that point I started to cry and sob. And there was snot coming down, and I was like in such a state, and I couldn't move to like say anything or do anything. And eventually a tutor heard her, came in, brought me out of the trance. I felt really giddy. They gave me a tissue. It took me back into a trance, and I have no recollection what happened there, but I came away from that. I read up, and people were whispering in the college, she's had her first abs. And I'm like, what the hell's an abs? I don't know what you're talking about. And it was like a spontaneous ab reaction is what they sort of said. But I have no idea what I was ab reacting to, except I had one idea that perhaps I had an out-of-body experience, and I saw my finger, which would be... makes sense. But the other one, which makes more sense, is my mum had died a few years before, and she'd been overseas in Tunisia with my dad and for 3 months, and my dad's health wasn't good. He was in a wheelchair, and my mum had taken very, very ill, and I flew out to Tunisia and came home with her and my dad in an air ambulance, and we didn't have room for the luggage. So we got mum back into hospital, and she died 2 weeks after. And she died on the 22nd of February. On the 26th of February, I had to go to the airport to pick up my mum and dad's luggage, which would have been on the flight they were due home on. And it would have been on the M62 to Manchester Airport, which made so much more sense. It's like, Ange, do we go on the M62 to go home? I went on the M62, but mum wasn't coming home. It was just a luggage. And I think all that emotion that was a memory was, I didn't even know it was there, but I felt brilliant, absolutely, like this release that I didn't even know I was holding on to. So that was the start of my hypnosis journey. I thought, oh my God, this is just so special. So that was it, really. That was the start.
That's such an interesting start to have as an introduction to hypnosis. It's like, okay, well, let's go into a really deep experience there. And after you had that experience, I know many people would feel quite shaken by that. You were talking about the release there. What did you do next?
Well, I was already a therapist, so I was already seeing clients. Hmm. So my clients were happy to be guinea pigs. They'd come for reflexology and they'd get hypnosis as well. You know, it was whatever they got hypnosis as well. And so that I got the practice right from the start. And so then I just carried on. Then I had somebody on the course had been to London and learned NLP and trained with Richard Bandler and Paul McKenna and Michael Neal at the time. The only person I was interested
in. Trio, geez.
Yeah. The only person I was interested in was Paul McKenna because he was a famous hypnotist in the UK. I've got my photograph.
How funny is that when you have the likes of Richard Bandler, one of the co-creators of NLP, and Michael Neal. I don't know if Michael Neal had discovered.
No, but
by that stage,
back then it was all about NLP back then. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with Michael. Yeah, it was like all of them, the synergy. I just had an amazing time, and I did my practitioner and my master practitioner, which included hypnosis. And I was on stage with Paul McKenna with a microphone in my hand, hypnotizing a guy on stage with Paul. And I was like, I don't know. I didn't have any thinking going on when I put my hand up and he chose me out of about 250 people to go out and do that. But it was like one of those magical moments. And yeah, so I got to meet Paul, but I was mesmerized. I think I spent the whole time in a trance, to be honest, so particularly when Richard Bandler was talking.
He has a habit of doing that, doesn't he?
But I
some of these recordings I've listened to, there's one he does on amnesia, which I think I've listened to a handful of times, and every time without fail, I just marvel at his brilliance and the things that he says. I always love his quote, you know, when he's talking about, you know, can you remember to forget or forget to remember, or that sort of patter that he does that is really perfect. It just brings a smile to my face every time.
Is amazing. And so I came home I did the prac and the master prac, still seeing my clients. I was getting amazing results, but I didn't have a conscious idea. Well, I did have a conscious idea, but I was like, wasn't totally sure about what I was doing, like swish pattern, you know, the submodalities and the swish patterns and the rewind. And I had it all there, but I was playing with it and I was using it, but I was getting great results, but I didn't understand how. It was just like, it was just happening. And then I moved to Australia. And then that's when I actually met James before I came to Australia, because there used to be, it doesn't exist anymore, but when I did my course in London, there was an internet group called NLP Connections. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Remember that? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and they were giving postcards out at the venue, and I'd got this. And so I was looking to see who was in Australia who did NLP, and found James. So we connected and we became friends. And that's where my connection with James came from, through.
Could explain which James it is, because
I am so sorry. I'm so sorry. Yes, James de Carlos. Yeah.
Because James. I don't know. I mean, James de Carlos. I'm a fellow Melburnian. I've been to a weekend of James's work, and even that introductory weekend was extremely transformative and eye-opening in so many ways. So it feels like this is just a string of recommendations to anyone listening. But if you ever get the opportunity to do any form of training with James, you are in for an absolute treat, because not only is he one of the loveliest and nicest people you could ever hope to meet, but he is an extraordinary trainer, to say the least, isn't he?
He's had so much faith in me. To be honest, it's like I did my trainer training in NLP back in 2008, and I didn't get around to teaching. And then he kept saying, "When are you going to do this? When are you going to do this training, Ange?" And then I've got a story about everything that I do, but I got sick in 2012. I got breast cancer. And so I didn't, you know, it was a gift in lots of ways. And it was a reminder, like, you know, I need to get on and do all these things that I want to do, because I don't know how long I've got, you know, I don't want to be on my deathbed and regret stuff. So I got in touch with James and said, "Right, I'm ready." And he said, "Okay, I'll help you in any way, you know, sit back of room, I'll join you, I'll co-train, whatever." So I chose for him to co-train. And so we co-trained together, which was, it was brilliant. I learned so much. And it was also really scary.
He's not intimidating.
No, not at all.
To train alongside him, I imagine, would be an intimidating experience.
Only because of my thoughts about, again, everybody that I
it's
know.
Mindset, that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. They're also, I have so much admiration for them. So there's a thinking that I could never be like them, but it's not about being like them. It's
no.
about thinking, you know, through what model them, take the bits that I admire and then morph it into who I am, you know, and how I present, I guess.
Which I think is such a relevant and important point in relation to the very purpose of this podcast, because, you know, I think so many people do their trainings and through no fault of their own want to go on to become a mini version of who they trained with. I know, for instance, back when I first started studying hypnosis, I was listening so much to the work that Uncommon Knowledge were doing that practically I think I could have done almost a perfect Mark Tyrrell impersonation. But I was just so impressed by his style and his delivery. And it's only over time that I've kind of been able to refine that back a little bit and to begin to just go, okay, what was it that he was doing that I liked, and how can I bring that to who I am? And I think that's what I'm hearing from your experience as well, whether it be with Bandler or McKenna or Michael Neal or James or any of the really top shelf trainers that you've had the fortune to train with.
And I guess the next big step with me was when I did my clarity training with Jamie Smart. I'm looking at dropping all these names at the moment, but it was, I came across the three principles back in 2010 through, it was so many stories, but my friend from England came over to see, traveling with her daughter when she was 50, and she wrote a book about life begins at 50, and she came to stay with us, and she'd gone through a breakup, a divorce, and she was looking to do something different. And I said, look, get back into your training, because I'd talked to her about Bandler and Paul McKenna, and she'd actually done the training with them. She did kinesiology with me. We'd done lots of trainings together. So I'd said, there's a really good trainer in Ingle, Jamie Smart, who's not down in London, he's nearer you. So she went back and did the training. But then I met her the following year, and I recommended this little book to her. And when I gave her the book, she says, this is what I'm learning from Jamie. So James was moving away from NLP into principles. And she was the first, like, she was not magic circle. I don't know what they call it. Some sort of circle of his first inner circle of people that he was introducing to his clarity, model. And so the book that I'm referring to was called Stop Thinking and Start Living by Richard Carlson. So it's such a lovely little book that I've given to so many clients over the years, but it's not talked a lot about in the principles world.
Right. Well, Richard Carlson also wrote the famous Don't Sweat the Small Stuff.
Right. That's all the same stuff. So it's all really, he'd met Sid Banks, and that's where it was coming from. And it was so funny because this is what I'm doing. And then after that, I'd actually got in touch with Michael Neal about, I was wanting to do more online coaching, and I must have sent him a message, and he said something about back in the old NLP days. And it wasn't until that point that I knew that I'd moved away from NLP. And that's that, you know, then Jamie Smart trained with Michael Neal, and it's like all this intermingling.
Connection, yeah.
It's really interesting.
I have to say to the listeners out there, Michael Neal wrote a book called The Inside Out Revolution, which I have on Audible, and I think I listen to it at least twice a year.
It's brilliant.
Because it's just such a beautifully written short book that you can – it's only about, you know, 4 hours to listen to. And Michael Neal reads it, narrates it himself, which makes it feel even more personable. You know, you feel like you're getting – the author's true intent through his performance.
Yes.
And it's just such a great book to introduce you to the three principles. It's well worth getting.
Definitely, definitely. And it just is so got such a beautiful way of articulating and sharing that. It's just easy. I don't know. I find him really easy to listen to and absorb.
As a therapist, I don't imagine you sit down with a client and think, well, I'm going to use three principles here.
Oh, my God. No. You know,
I imagine, much like we were talking about before, there's been this kind of organic assimilation of it all into, you know, whatever approach or experience it is that people get with Angela. I'm trying to frame the question that's coming forward here, but I guess in terms of, when you sit down with a client nowadays, you know, what do you feel comes forward most? How do you mix all of those beautiful kind of things together? I don't think that's an easy question to really answer, is it? But
it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting because when I first did the year course, I did get a little bit confused in my head about what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, and then I guess I was, you know, like you go through chaos and then it all settles down again. And now where I am right now, it's like what I got so, so much that it's about taking stuff off my mind. So now I used to be such a worrier. My mum called me a born worrier, and anxiety I mastered from being about 3. So I know it really, really well. And since I really sort of got more insight about the inside out nature of life and how everything works, and life just got easier for me. I just stopped worrying. And so it's not like I don't worry. It's like there's a mini me, and she sits here. She sits on my shoulder and she never shuts up. But mostly now I just ignore her and I can just be present. And that's where it sounds too easy and too simple, but that's where the real magic was for me. I stopped trying so hard and just, when I'm not trying so hard, I'm able to be present. And that's where the magic happens. I mean, I work a couple of days a week at a retreat that specializes in addictions and, you know, really extreme stress, anxiety, depression, you know. And it's just being there, being with them. And even if I didn't say a word, that then you can feel, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. We can feel that connection,
the
right
energy,
now.
I call it the energy connection.
Yeah.
Which, it's kind of funny. Back in 2020, I think, was when I had my spiritual year. Prior to that, I wouldn't have said that I was spiritually minded at all. And yet I think it was that that isolation and that not being there. It was kind of adjustment for me online to get my head around how do I build that same connection with them that I get in person that, you know, is needed online. I don't know if that's what it is that you're referring to, that kind of being present in the room with them, that exchange, or
It's like a felt thing. Like when the old me would always been worrying about saying the right thing, which technique should I use? Mm-hmm. You know, what are they thinking of me? I don't know, a million and one things. But when it's not about me, then I'm free to be present, and then you notice more. Then I notice little things, and I notice it's almost like things stand out more, and I notice when they're in touch with their wisdom. Like old might say, "What? Where did that come from? What made you do that?" Like, what, you know, somebody who's just been about to attempt suicide, you know, and something stopped them, and it's like, well, what do you think it was that? What changed? And it's about guiding them to their insights rather than me giving them. You know, like in NLP, there's a you know, one of the presuppositions is that, you know, tell you, and it's like, what is it? A pattern presented belongs to the presenter. A pattern discovered belongs to the discoverer. So it's like tell them. It's like them finding that space inside themselves.
That's an interesting, because I know that so many people, when they do sit down to do work with people, do get, and this is the interesting thing. I think that for many people, I know when they start out in hypnotherapy, there is almost this reliance upon scripts and almost having the session prepared down to the minute before they see someone. So they'll be like, what am I seeing you for? You're seeing me for anxiety. Right, well, where's my anxiety script? And doing that. And I get it. I absolutely get it. They want to be prepared, and they don't want to have that person feel like they're not giving them the best possible service. So I get it's all coming from a good intention.
It is.
However, you're right. In that instance, you're trying to make that person fit your session as opposed to just being present in the moment and curious and stripping back that negative self-talk that might be going on, or that not even negative self-talk, but that talk that's saying, what am I going to do next? And what technique
ego.
Are we bringing here?
Ego that wants to, you want to do your best.
Ego. Yes. Perfect. That's it. Ego. It's the part that's afraid that you're not going to do the best for the client.
Yeah.
Or the part that's afraid your client's going to be dissatisfied. Or the part that's afraid that your client's not going to get the change that they came in for, no matter how miraculous or unlikely it was going to be in one session anyway. So it's all those things.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I've found the more I've been with that, just see what, let it flow, see what goes, that's where the magic happens. So it's not that I don't do anything. Like it might, while I'm sat, might occur to me to do, you know, an NLP technique. Like just last week at the retreat, the thing is I can't plan. at the retreat, because I go in the morning and I'll get my schedule the day before, but I'll often never have met these people, you know, and then I go up in the morning and they have files so I can look at the notes and things and get an idea. And then I go in the room and I'm with them, but I don't know. It might be the first time I've met them and I've got an hour with them to make a difference. So I have one intention for that session. Mm. And that's that they go out of that door feeling better than when they walked in. And so the insecurities that come up, like last week, we have a guest at the moment that's been deaf since birth, and she's, you know, in her 40s. So it was like, at first I'm like, what am I going to do? I can't do it. Nearly every guest has some hypnosis, eyes closed, because they love it, you know. But I thought, well, she will hear me if she closes her eyes. Anyway, that was about me, not her. And we had a beautiful session, and I've more with her since, and it's a beautiful connection. And there's so much that we can do, you know.
Curious, and I'm sure there are people listening to this who are curious as well. How do you work with someone who is blind?
She's not blind, she's deaf.
Oh, sorry, how do you work with someone who is deaf?
Okay, so with what we have done so far, it was more like conversation and guiding her and to her insights, which is a principles-based conversation. But what occurred to me towards the end of the session, which hopefully I get a chance to spend, she's there for months, hopefully I get a chance to do this, because, and it might not happen on the day, but it occurred to me that we could do, she's got this thing about being 4 years old, when somebody had told her, she wanted 4 or 5 years old, she wanted to be a doctor, and someone said, there's no way you can do that, because you're deaf and you won't be able to wear the stethoscope and hear somebody breathing. And so she's got this imprint from that, and she feels like she triggers back to that. So what we can do timeline spatially. So
of course
the imprint, you know,
that would make sense. Yes,
because yeah. She understands, she lip reads perfectly. So we can do that if I want. Where it came from, you know, where do thoughts come from, you know, it popped in, what, you know, it just seemed like
now you're slipping into three principles kind of stuff there. Where do thoughts come from?
That's right. And so, and that's what, when you're present and you're not thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do? When you're doing that, or you, me, whoever, we haven't got room for new thought because our head's full of stress and worry. But when that settles, there's room for new, something new, original thought or an idea or whatever. And it's like, oh, okay, I'll run with that.
Smart thinking. I don't know if I would have thought of that. So I appreciate that you shared that. You're talking before about the little one that sits on your shoulder chatting away there.
At lunch.
how often does she still come forward nowadays?
Oh, every day. She never goes away. But, you know, like, I used to have a restaurant in Whitby in North Yorkshire, and right, we were down by the pier, down by the water, and there was a mini, mini fairground outside our door. And there was these teacups, and in the middle of the teacups was a genie. And the music was like Genie, I don't know, from Aladdin. I can't even remember the tune now, surprisingly. But all the customers used to say, does that not drive you bonkers? And I never used to notice it, because it's a bit like this. Once you tune out of it, you don't hear it so much. When I get tricked, because I get tricked every day, but it tends to be if I'm tired, if I'm overtired, or
same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got a virus or something, you know, it's like.
Yeah. I have to be rested in order to have that focus that's needed in session. If I'm really tired, I know it's not offering the best, and I avoid.
I mean, even that's not true, though, is it? It's
not. Well, again, we're coming back to mindset or beliefs that come with that. So, you know, my belief is obviously that if I'm tired, then I'm unlikely to provide a really good session, which is, you know, there's no proof of, well, there's past experiences where I perhaps have felt that I've given an assessment or a judgment to my own sessions based on that I was tired, and therefore it may not have gone as well. It happened only recently where I had a session where I was just really tired, my internet went down for the first time ever halfway through, which was not common. And I was just feeling distracted and I didn't feel like the session had gone terribly well. And I was in touch with the client a couple of days later just to find out how it had gone. And she had said, oh, no, I've noticed some shifts. And I thought, okay, well, maybe I was just being too hard on myself or, you know, mind reading, predicting that there was going to be this
That's right.
terrible outcome when there may not be.
That's it. That's again, that's it. But another example is, and I use a lot of running examples because that's my passion as well. So a couple of days ago, I have my running coach in Mexico and she gives me my program every week. And 2 days ago, it was, I looked, I think, what? It was like 10 minutes warm up and then 12 sets of 400 meters, so it was out and back. So 400 meters fast, 400 meters recovery. Now, you know what it's like. It's January in Queensland and it's hot and it's humid. And I'm like, I can't do that. So my head was full of, it's too hot. I'm not capable. I can't do this.
All the excuses. Yep.
I'm dehydrated. My back hurts. I had so many excuses, but I was going with my running friend, Steve. And so he came with me and then we were arguing because he runs a little bit faster and he was saying, we've done 9. I'm saying, no, we've done 7. And I was counting. Anyway, in the end, he did one less than me. And I was like, I'm doing what I've said I'm going to do. And I can look back on my Garmin at the results and there was like all the peaks. There was only 6 peaks because it's 6 fast, 6. But I did it and I felt good for doing it. But if I had listened to the noise in my head, I would never have done that session.
And we were talking just before we hit record about, you know, I know that there are some people out there who did courses years ago who allowed those voices in their head to stop them from seeing clients at the moment.
That's right.
And it's funny because, you know, people need us more than ever at the moment with the level of anxiety that exists either during lockdown. And now as Australia opens back up again, I think there's even more anxiety because Omicron is, you know, common within our community.
Yeah. I think there is a lot, and I'm coming across a lot at the retreat now, a lot of COVID anxiety for various reasons. But it's we live in the feeling of our moment-to-moment thinking. It's always coming from us, from the thoughts that we're paying attention to. It just is. And so we see it as depending on where on our thinking in the moment. So if we paid attention to it, like, and I don't know if I got this from Jamie, you know, you forget sometimes where you get your Jamie Smart, I'm thinking about now, but it was like, you don't have to wait for a good feeling to do something. Because if you wait for a good feeling, you might never do it. And there's lots of times I don't want to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go for a run. People think I do. They think but they don't understand. It's the feeling I like after doing it that keeps me doing it. So, you know, I love it somewhere along the run. I get into that euphoric good feeling, but I don't get it every time. It doesn't come from, you know, but I feel good for the benefits from consistently doing it. And it's the same with anything. It's about the consistency.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting you're saying that because we're talking about having that feeling, or that feel-good feeling that happens. And I know that when you have a great session with a client, there's that beautiful feeling that exists of, you know, I'm living my life's purpose. I'm doing, you know, work that's meaningful for me and helping people in the process. And I tend to wonder maybe it's, you know, people are sometimes afraid to take on certain clients or see clients because they're afraid that the session's not going to go the way they planned. We see forums where people say, I've been seeing someone and they didn't get the outcome they want. What do I do next? And I think that, you know, I applaud those people that step forward and ask these questions in forums because they're prepared to put the ego aside and to learn.
Yeah, definitely. There's two things that came up for me there was when I first moved to Australia, I put my business card up in various places, and this is back in 2006. And somebody, I had a phone call. It was a man with a, sounded like a European accent, and he wanted me, to go and meet this boy who was in a coma and bring him out of his coma. That's sort of what he said. And my initial response was, I'm sorry, this is way beyond my scope. You know, you need to find somebody else. And I put the phone down. And then my head filled up with, you know what? If it was my boy, I'd want somebody to do something. So I ended up ringing him back. And I met this, when I look back, I think, oh, I've been in danger, really. I met him in Garden City in Brisbane that I've never been to before. And he was, this guy was probably around 70, and he ran a magazine, and it was for people from, oh my gosh, what's the place called? Bosnia. And he wanted, so he took me in his car. Thankfully, he didn't go and, you know, he took me, well, it did, it was genuine. He took me to see this boy, and the boy had been, it was a businessman. So it was a young man, not a boy. Sorry, it was a businessman. And he had been in an accident, a car accident, and he was left in a vegetative state. And he'd been in this state for 5 years. Now, his family were quite well off, and he had lots of physio. And he didn't look like he'd been in a vegetative state for 5 years. And his parents were just wanting some help. And I said, look, I'm not sure, you know, what I can do, but I can do massage, I can do reflexology, we can do some hypnotic suggestions, or, you know, I was happy to go along and do what we could do. And then I came out of the house, and then he says, now we go to other boy. I said, what do you mean other boy? There can't be two. There's another one from Bosnia in a vegetative state. And he was like, it was so, this was quite sad, because this boy had not had the same level of care. His mum cared deeply for him, but he hadn't had the physio, so his arms were getting quite out of shape and stuff. And mum was in a really terrible state. She was not good. And I was doing the same thing. And then it was actually while I was doing my course in Melbourne, I was going over to Melbourne every few weeks to do James Acala's NLP. And there was a guy on the course, I've forgotten his name, and he knew somebody who was a hypnotist in Melbourne who specialised in this sort of thing with coma. And so I gave him the details to the family, and he came across and did a session, and I was in the session with them. And it was a 4-hour session, and it was interesting. And he, you know, it's like, I'm not sure how far I'm into this or not. It was new. It was a bit out there. But he was like communicating. Mum had never been hypnotized, but he hypnotized her, which was probably really, really good for her. Lots of ego strength suggestions and stuff. But then he communicated to her son through mum. Now, I've done kinesiology where we've had like a surrogate, so it makes sense. And the stuff that was coming out, that he was quite happy where he was, and he had friends there and entities, and he didn't, you know, it was really quite interesting. But anyway, at the end of the session, the boy leaned up and pulled on the guy's arm, and he made this noise that I'd never heard him before. And I thought, he's either doing two things. He's either saying to you, you're an idiot. Oh, thank you. I was not quite sure which it was.
Well, maybe a bit of both.
It could have been a bit of both. And I was leading somewhere with that whole story, and I went a bit off track. But it was like, again, what I was getting to was, it's not a, if I had, I wasn't going to attempt anything while I was out of my scope. I was just wanting to, I guess, because of my own son, who was a similar age, just wanted to do the best that I could to help somebody in a situation, in, you know, not about bringing them out of the... would be wonderful if I said they both came out of the coma and they're wonderful. But I moved away. I moved to the... I moved up the coast, and then I heard from one of the families about 6 months later, and the situations are still the same. But, you know, when it's that sort of situation, I didn't want to keep ringing and seeing how things work, because it's never very nice, you know. It's just an ongoing, so sad that families live like that for a long time.
Yeah, but I guess know, as you were saying, there could be that fear there of how can I help? What is it that I can offer when there's a problem that seems to be way out of bounds?
So that what was getting at with, like, when therapists have a fear, it's like, it's, you know, you're not, our job is not to fit. They're not broken. I don't think people are broken, but it's like, so that's not our job. Our job is to just, you know, do the best that we can do and recognize, you know, when it's something that is beyond our scope, you know, it's, that's the thing. So
bring
I was just.
Knowing what you do into that, that makes an offer to the world.
Yeah. And so I'm glad I did what I did. And there is a, there's a song that always reminds me of the two boys, because I used to sing and I used to talk to them and, you know, and there's a song called Chasing Cars. I didn't even know what it was called back then. And the words about, will you lie here with me and just forget the world, and just reminds me of them.
Beautiful song.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who sang it now.
Was it Snow Patrol?
Was Snow Patrol, yes.
I didn't even know that back then. I've only learned that since. I used to just hear it on the radio in the background, and it just seemed like our song back then, you know. But it was my song, at least.
If Ange now could go back in time to when that younger version of Ange first started to do hypnotherapy and to see people, what advice would you give to her?
I mean, what's coming up is like step up more, speak out more. But yeah, it's like even now as I'm saying that, it's like I don't do it, you know, enough really. And it, because it's not about me. When it's about showing people what's possible, and anything's possible when we get out of our own way. And that's what I share really. And that's do more of that really. Back then, I had a lot of noise in my head that stopped me. Like I said, the noise still comes back, but not as loud, and I don't take as much notice of it these days. But there's still more that I could do.
What can you do to help turn down that noise?
It's not about turning it down. It's just ignoring it and just doing.
Okay, so you let it be just as loud as it wants to be, but you just choose.
It's like, like the genie outside the restaurant. It never turns down. It was always there. It just wasn't in my awareness.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent. And, you know, we can't really talk about younger Ange without thinking about the Ange in the future. You know, what's your plans there? You know, what?
Oh, seriously. This sounds really sad, but I'll be 63 next month, and my brother died when he was 63 5 years ago.
Oh.
Quite suddenly, with a brain, 4 weeks after diagnosis of a brain tumor. No, but it's like, you know what? I don't know how long I'm here. Well, none of us do. So I want to make the most of the time that I've got. So do the things that I want to do. Well, I do anyway. You know, the running, the roller skating, the dancing. What we do, one thing that is on my list that has been held up is to move to Thailand, because my son lives in Thailand and my daughter's in the UK, and this is, but I want, we can get a retirement visa and still do some work. And pay my taxes in Australia. You know, there's ways to do this. And that's, so I would like to hold retreats in Thailand. Just doing what I do, but yeah.
What part of Thailand are we talking about here? If it's Bangkok, maybe not, but.
Okay. So, my son lives in Bangkok. That's where they live. But my daughter-in-law, they have a home in Lampang, which is up northern Thailand on the way to Chiang Mai. And I love the area up there. And I also live down in Hua Hin, which is only like on the coast, which is a really nice resort, which is two and a half hours from Bangkok. So there's options. That's not set in stone yet, but the, yeah, and to be able to, you know, it's a good central hub to come to Australia or go to the UK. Once we can travel, you know, well, it's starting to get easier. My first plan is to go and see my grandchildren in Yorkshire and hopefully in spring.
Yes, I can't blame you for wanting that. That would be, I think, very much high on the list. And I remember that for a while there, you were offering a course to people to build their confidence as a hypnotist. Do you still offer that nowadays?
Yeah, I made it into a saleable course on my website. And I keep thinking I ought to do another one because there's so many therapists that are lacking that confidence that, you know, and people often say to me, you really help me. And it's like, I'm just doing what I do. I often don't realize just how helpful it is. You know, you forget how far you've come.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And sometimes just being able to offer that reframe or to be able to, you know, teach them how to ignore that voice
that you can do this. It's that encouragement, isn't it?
In fact, I think it's a couple of things. I think it's important for people to recognize that everyone kind of experiences that voice in some way.
Of course.
And that, you know, even some of the interviews I've done with some of the top hypnotists, they still say they have that voice in some form, you know.
And I love that. I love it when people are
It's normalizing the experience so that you know that what you're experiencing is completely normal.
Yeah. And that's what I love too. I love it. It's so heartwarming when somebody I admire does something wrong or gets it wrong. It's like...
Love that
too. It's okay for me too.
You know, it's horrible for them, I'm sure, but when they say, hey, look, I'm human too. I'm not the superhuman that some of you might think I am.
Yeah.
And this happened and it reminds me of this.
It reminds me
I must do this or something. Yeah. And I kind of wish I saw more of that in the hypnotherapy industry. There are some people that can be very humble, but there's also some that I think have a lot of bravado.
And I don't trust that. I like, you know, it's not normal really, you know, but it is. It's like that, I guess, you know, I guess that's the environment I grew up in. Like, that was one thing. Again, it's different area, but I remember being in hospital in the UK having a kidney op, and the surgeon, Mr. Price, the consultant, was coming on the ward, and everybody had to go in the day room. I had special exemption because I couldn't get out of bed, but you'd have thought God was coming on the ward. It was really scary. And then my experience here when I had breast cancer, my surgeon was so beautiful and human and like a friend. You know, it was like the difference between, I don't know if that's because we're in a different era now or whether it's just a different culture in a different country or, but it's nicer, definitely, to be more human.
If people want to reach out to you, Ange, and say hello or to check out your website or anything, how can they do that?
Well, my name is my website, angelafarlam.com. And on there, you can book in a free, it's called a free discovery call. It's a beautiful opportunity for us to do like this, do a Zoom call, and it's all automated. So they can book in a time online and we can connect and have a chat. And if they want to go any further, if they want anything, everything I do is, I'm not very good at websites, and I keep paying people to do them and it's never what I want. So I try and do things myself, and it takes me like days to do one thing, but it's all an ongoing process. And you know,
my problem though as well, when I first started out, was I didn't have a website for a good year or so because I thought I will teach myself how to build websites. And of course it never happened. And then I think I got to a new year and I just went, oh, bugger this, and jumped on Facebook and wrote, who in my network knows how to do websites? And I had one up within a week.
Yeah. And it's just a presence. It's, you know, my daughter's business is, she does have a website, but all her business comes from Facebook, basically. Mm. That's her platform. She does weddings. So she came from nothing. It's a different story, but again, it's like, it's how things happen when you're not looking for it. She got married and she was making her own flowers, artificial flowers, silk flowers, and sharing them on Facebook to see what people, the colours and what people thought. And people within her groups were saying, you should sell them, they're really good. And so she started selling a few. And then a few months later, she was very busy. It was getting really busy and she was also working, and she had a heart attack. She was born with a major heart defect, so the risks were there, and it was mild, but it spurred her on to give up work and focus on the business. And then she went from just doing the flowers to doing the whole event she plans. And now she's even doing the photography. She's just like, she's a little entrepreneur. It's my daughter. She's
good honor. Angela, thank you so much for being my guest this episode and for sharing some insights there about how to ignore that little voice and how to be able to bring together all these different things we learn in order to be able to make who we are our own unique hypnotist. You know, I hope everyone's been getting some inspiration from your story today and recognizing that you're just as up there as the people you've trained with.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's good.
For everyone listening, I hope you take care in the meantime. And I look forward to seeing you in a fortnight. Until then, take care. Thank you for watching the Confident Hypnotherapist podcast. If you enjoyed it, make sure you go and check out some of the other episodes that we have available online. And if you really enjoyed it, make sure you give us a like or subscribe to the channel, as it helps to make sure that you're notified as new each episode goes up. Of course, make sure you jump onto Facebook and find the Hypnotherapist Networking Group. Lots of valuable information there for both new hypnotists and experienced hypnotists alike. I look forward to seeing you next time. Take care.